Welcome to Talking Cybersecurity, a weekly podcast listened to by people in over 40 countries around the world. My name is Richard Herron. This podcast involves people talking cybersecurity. Expect to hear about data breaches, different approaches to cybersecurity, and reports on cybersecurity events that I or my guests attend. Opinions expressed by myself or my guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of my organisation or the organisation my guests are associated with. If you want to continue the conversation, feel free to join the LinkedIn group Talking Cybersecurity. Thanks to Pixabay for allowing me to use their music. Hi everyone, and welcome to the Christmas 2023 edition of the Talking Cybersecurity Podcast. When I started this in February this year, as the Australian CISO, I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would last until December. Nor did I ever think I'd get past episode 10. But here we are, it is December, and this is episode 52. Speaking of episode 52, today we conclude our three-part episode with Lue Gishesh from Spartan Security. I certainly enjoyed doing the podcast with Lue, and I enjoyed re-listening to what we said as I was producing all three episodes. We did have a few little network issues as we spoke. Hopefully that doesn't detract from our conversation too much. I won't talk too much as the discussion with Lue in this episode lasts about 25 minutes. Interestingly enough, I made a statement in there along the lines of, I hope we don't hear this week of a cyber incident involving educational hospitals. Alas, if you read Friday's Age, you'll see that there is a report of a breach on St. Vincent's Hospital. Let's move on to the last part of our discussion with Lue. I hope you like it. I did enjoy the ground we covered, and I certainly would like Lue back on the podcast again, hopefully under better recording conditions. Let's hear more from Lue. I'm going to ask you probably what people would consider some soft questions, and that is, like, you're in cyber, what do you find most rewarding and challenging about it? Like, why are you doing this and not painting fences? Don't tell me you used to be a painter, but anyway.
No, I can do a lot of things very well. Any home renovation or anything with that regard is not one of it.
Yep.
I touch something and return to rebel. I try to screw a painting on the wall and just make a big hole in the wall. So that's why I don't paint. What's most rewarding in cyber, Richard, is to me, is the fact that I'm doing a difference. The fact that customers really and truly value and trust my opinion about a product or vendor or supplier. And when I tell them this is a risk to you, they actually, the one they care, they're actually doing something about it. So actually, this is the most rewarding thing about my career, that I know that if I pick up the phone to my customer and said, your MSP is not doing a good job because in security, because such and such, they will do something about it. I think that's the most rewarding part of my career, that I really am making difference to make companies more secure.
Can I ask a question about that? Do you find now that you're the head honcho at SpartanSec that you now have more gravitas? If you were back in, you know, your organization 10 years ago and you gave that same recommendation, because you were just an employee, would they kind of not pay as much attention than they are now with, you know, you're the top dog of Spartan Security?
Unfortunately, you're right. They won't listen to you. Let's say I'm a security analyst and find something that's, I think this is a problem to the business, and I pick up the phone and call my CIO, and I might just be yelled at the face and tell them to get lost, unfortunately. Whereas a highly paid consultant, paid by the hour, he said the same thing, they will listen to him more.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's the reality of sometimes the human. They turn to believe the more senior people, the people coming from that side, and people coming with a tone that I do have a lot of experience under my belt. Yeah. Although myself and that poor person might talking about the same thing, telling the business the same thing, because we didn't resonate or talk about business, or he didn't talk the business language that they like to hear, they usually ignore him or her.
And the good thing about the role when you come into a new organization is that you have no ties with anyone. There are no emotional ties, no histories of funny antics or whatever, whereas in your existing organization 10 years ago, there would have been friendships there, but some tensions, some loyalties, and those things do get in the way. What do you find the most annoying or challenging thing in cybersecurity, or you're happy 100% of the time?
No. There's a lot of annoying thing about cybersecurity. Sometimes I find it's more challenging or sometimes more and most annoying that some of these suppliers or vendors, including software vendors, are so ignorant now in 2023 about the malpractice that they're doing and what does that mean to their customer. I'll give you an example. The other day, one of the education customers engaged us to do some, he called me and said, look, we do have a vendor who manage all our learning management system, and this learning management system have all kind of awful amount of sensitive data about users and a lot of sensitive data about that users. Some of those sensitive data even related to their personal data, not just PII data. We're talking about sensitive personal data. And we look at it and we find basic hygienic we're missing, encryption address, encryption in transit. And I'm talking, this has happened last month. So I went there, and the guy who engaged us to help him out, he is not a very soft-spoken IT director, that business, but he's very high level and he's not technical at all. So I went there and I was trying to explain to that software vendor what are the risks of not having encryption address in transit. And it looks like I'm speaking different language. And the guy, he is the founder of the business. He's a programmer at heart, how he started. He knows all the technology of the cloud technology. He knows what, but he just tried to deflect the question because he found it too hard to go and implement the basic control that I'm asking for. So these are sometimes the challenging part when we help customers assessing their risk and find managed service provider or suppliers are not doing the right thing. When we try to call them out, we sometimes find that confrontation is a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree. The people factor of, like, I always say to people, they go, isn't cybersecurity difficult? And I go, well, over time you learn your trade. Cybersecurity in itself isn't, to me anyway, it's not something that is overly difficult, but it's those people interactions. They are the difficult things. Just because cybersecurity is my priority one doesn't mean that it's your priority number one. I'm sure it is, though. It doesn't mean, you know, that the other teams, the marketing team, that won't be priority one for them. It'll be important for them, but it won't be their number one priority. So, it's dealing with those different teams and trying to get a balance, and it can be difficult.
Absolutely. Can I just go on?
Sure.
Can I follow up on that one? What are the things that I learned and I was really lacking when I was working as a security consultant in other businesses where I wasn't my own boss? I suddenly started realizing the challenge that the business owners or CEOs need to balance with, because yes, I understand it's a risk in the business, but the business is all about balancing risk versus reward. And when you find the cost of managing that risk exceeded the reward, which has always been the first mind of any CEO or business owner, that I need to make revenue, I need to bring cash flow, I need to keep the business afloat. That is the mindset that I start thinking more of when I started my own business, because I have those challenges myself. And when I go and advise customers, I always tell myself, I need to give them advice that mindful that they have bigger concern or bigger fish to fry than what the security consultant tell them. So therefore, I need to make that balance. And it's not always easy balance to strike.
And that's why sometimes with the certain risks I've seen in organizations where I've said, this is a serious risk, we need to take action. And I'll say the board or the CEO or whoever has said, Richard, it's not your risk to accept or reject. It's our risk to accept or reject. So I don't care if they don't go along with my decision, just as long as we make the right decision, is cool by me. I can't dictate whether we accept risks or not. I can advise them whether we should accept or transfer or reject risks. But ultimately, CEO or the board, their decision, not my company. It's correct. Over to them. So
yes.
There's people who listen to this podcast. There's some very experienced people like you. There's people in the middle and there's some new people. And I get a number of emails from people who say, how do I crack it into the cyber field? How do I crack it into the cyber field? So one thing I say to them is, at least show me some interest. And there's some good certificate fours out there in cyber that ain't cost a lot. They're not a 3-year degree or a 8-year PhD or whatever. Just get something on paper first. And after that year of, just say, a cert four in cyber, you'll know whether you want to continue in this or not. And if you do, you got a bit of paper and it's going to impress me. Is that one of the bits of advice you'd give someone who wants to crack it into the cyber field?
Yes. Let me preempt that by saying something. You can teach anything to anybody except two things: passion and attitude. These things either come with you in the area or on the context that you are working with, your cyber, or don't. So if you come to me, don't show me passion, the right passion and the right attitude, even if you have all the certs under the sun, guess what? You are not good cybersecurity expert. The opposite of this argument is also true. If somebody come to me and said, look, I studied Cert 4 or Master in Cybersecurity and I need to crack it, and I'm passionate, generally passionate about, let's say, doing hacking or pen testing, and I start doing all those things by myself and reading those books and install Kali Linux on my computer and going all those hack the boxes forms and start playing with that, but I don't have the OSCP certification that is really hard to get, you know what? That's something I can work with. I think the certification is important, but they are important to show that you care enough and you're passionate enough about these things to study hard to get that piece of paper. And that itself shows me passion and attitude. You see people who come from all kind of non-technical background and start going to the cyber and start saying, okay, let me get this certificate because that helped me get more salaries. This is the wrong attitude, even though you come with the right paperwork on hands.
Yeah, I've received a lot of messages via LinkedIn, people saying, what certification is going to get me that next cyber job? Yeah. You're right. You talk about passion and attitude. When I worked at ANZ Bank in the 90s, and hello to anyone at the ANZ Bank who may be listening, my old boss there said two great words. It's a bit like your What did you say? You said passion and attitude, is that
attitude,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. He said, there's two things I look for when I hire people. I said, yeah, what's that? And he said, it's desire and aptitude. And he said, if you don't have the desire, then why would I hire you? But you also need aptitude as well. And look, I don't think aptitude means that you need Louis or Richard's 20 plus years experience. Aptitude's just, they're transferable skills. What have you done in the past? You've written some reports at uni? Okay, we can do that. And you've done some dashboard reporting or you've done some governance activities as part of some assignments. Looks good. That shows aptitude to me. You wouldn't expect a 21-year-old to solve all the problems in cybersecurity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, as long as they're transferable, that's good. And what about, if you've cracked it into the cyber world and you've done it for a couple of years and you're looking to move up to that great CISO position, do you just recommend them just to maybe just plot a course and work out what their next job is? So, I'll become a manager, then a senior manager, then a CISO? Or would you just say just go down the path and that path's going to take you down through some dead ends and other paths? Mm-hmm. Or what advice would you give people? Do they really need to nut out a plan of attack, do you think?
Yes, they do. Yeah, but before I answer that question, I want to go back to the previous point. If somebody want to also crack a cyber career, at least the one that I rated good in my books, this person, he or she or they, need to acquire a bit of hands-on skills because you can't go and follow checklists and assume that you know it all. You need to hold some sort of technical knowledge, whichever domain that is, in the technology space that you're trying to advise them on the cyber things, that you're able to have a substance of your recommendation. I see so many consultants coming from the Big Four, no insult to the Big Four consulting, but they come with their follow checklist, they follow very sophisticated, expensive Excel macro-driven checklist that they go and try to audit somebody against Essential 8 or SDTOP 35 or ISO 27001 or you name it. But they don't understand the intent of that control. How can you not understand the intent of that control if you didn't try to play with that control and understand what that control do for a living? So that was the first point. Sorry, you want to comment anything?
No, I agree with you. I get that. And in one organization, someone said, oh, you don't have DLP, you don't have data loss prevention, yeah, the whole world's going to end. And I've come back to them and said, it's defense in depth. We've got a lot of compensating controls here. Absolutely. Oh, but you don't have DLP. And I'm sort of thinking, yeah, you don't get to tick the little box that says DLP. But there's always, you've got to think about, you know, defense in depth and compensating controls. And most of us.
But you can't do that without having the technical knowledge to understand how to layer the controls and what's the purpose of DLP versus.
Exactly.
What's the purpose of the firewall? Because a good consultant needs to know what's the defense in depth is and what's the job of each control.
Yeah.
Not do you have a DLP, yes or no, and do you have a firewall, yes or no. You know that, for example, if you have an old piece of software that's 80% of your business revenue rely on and you can't patch it because it's written in an old Java code, and you are on the way to migrate it to a new platform, but that's going to take you 2 years. As a compensating controls, you do network segmentation, you need to do additional monitoring, and you do advanced log protection on that machine. Those compensating controls, if somebody doesn't come with a technical background to understand the job of those and what the risk they try to mitigate, they're not good consultants or they're not good security experts.
Yeah. You said a magic word that always pricks my ears up, and that was legacy systems. Do you still see a lot of legacy systems in the work you do?
Last month, I saw Windows NT 4. Live and kicking.
I thought you were saying Vista or MS-DOS.
No, I saw Windows XP, I saw Vista, and those were in 2023, not last month. But last month, I saw Windows NT 4. I've asked so many questions about it because I was so intrigued to see how that piece of equipment is still alive. And they put every single control under the sun, but they can't bloody touch it because they know there are some very old system connected to checkbooks that nobody knew how to operate because everybody who wrote the piece of code either died, retired, or moved on a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was interesting. But the Windows XP that I saw also this year wasn't last month, it was in August. Surprisingly and very frighteningly, it was connected to a camera systems in one of the education sector that record cameras inside and outside the campus, which connected to the internet. And it just, I don't want to know what's going to happen because that's a breach waiting to happen.
It's funny. My guess is that you're going to say it was in the hospital sector, but you said education. I wouldn't have picked that one, but interesting. Let's just hope we don't see any big data breaches in the newspaper in education or the hospital sector for that matter.
I realize that I didn't answer your question about the SISO, if you want me to answer that.
Sure.
To progress, let's say you build the passion, you build the attitude and the aptitude through the years, and you're ready to move your next C-level position, and you want to have the nice title, the nice money, and the nice appreciation, all the things come with it. You need to look at that, you need to walk to that, because that is earned, not given. And the way you need to earn that kind of title is you need to teach yourself how to speak to management, how to speak to business stakeholders. Teach yourself some negotiation skills. Teach yourself how your business operates. Where is the money came in and out of the business? What business process that actually making my business that I'm serving afloat? And surprisingly, it's easier said than done. I've seen so many security managers and SaaS, so they don't really understand where the money coming in and out. They understand the system A, number of endpoint and Windows Active Directory. It's way more complicated than that. And if you didn't understand that, how are you protecting a business that you don't know how to operate?
Yeah.
You need to read a lot of books, and you don't have to read a business books or cyber books. You need to read any book in English to start be able to express yourself. You can't get that without opening some books and reading. So I'm so big passionate about reading that I can't say if somebody want to progress their career, and even I told my team, read books. I don't care if you read a fiction story or crime story or anything, or even a business book. You need to read any book.
Yeah. And that point about, you know, getting to know, learning the business, because your job is to protect the business. Sometimes you can just start off having a cup of coffee every fortnight with one of the you know, main managers who either report to the CEO or who are, you know, two levels down from the CEO. And there's a lot of stuff you can pick up just having a coffee. And that way you build up a relationship with the business. And you know what it's like. Once you've established good business relationships, I'll do anything for you and you'll probably do anything for me. So,
and people love open up over coffee. And that's yes. The good thing about having a discussion outside of the office when there's no email bouncing in your mailbox or somebody calling you, just having a casual coffee, catching up, talking about what you did for weekends or what you plan for next weekend, etc. And then you drill down from that to the business. You move from that to the business and people will open up for you and will answer any curiosity question you have, especially if you have them generally and you're not asking them for malicious reasons, which you're not in that case.
But it's funny, you know, when you're young, I remember when I was young and I was at ANZ and other companies when I was kind of in my 20s, I guess, and you'd see a senior manager and I couldn't talk to a senior manager or he or she's a head of or they're a general manager. I couldn't speak to them. At the end of the day, they're just people. And now that I've had the C-level title a few times, I think nothing special about me. It's just that I've been around long enough to rise up the ranks. So the younger set should not feel scared at all, should they, to reach out over email and say, hey, I'd like to learn more about cybersecurity, Mr. or Mrs. Sizo. Can we have a coffee? Yeah, you might be able to meet with them every day, but you will be able to meet with them and there's nothing wrong with reaching out like that.
And it's not just something wrong. They have to, because I would tell you the trade-off. When you are a senior business people, you need to make uncomfortable and hard decision every day. You are expected as a junior person to do those uncomfortable decisions. And that uncomfortable decision or things that you ask them to do is to reach out to somebody senior and ask them for coffee. The worst he or she can say is, no, sorry, I'm busy. If you are not prepared to put yourself outside of your comfort zone, like what the senior person is doing every day, 1,000 times a day, then you may not be cut to get that position if that's your career aspiration to get a senior position title.
And that thing about the senior position title, you've really got to ask yourself, why, and we've covered this on this podcast before, but why do I want to become a CISO? Top two or three reasons are, because I want to be the big hero, I'll earn lots of money and I have all this status. They are the wrong reasons for wanting to be a CISO. And I think if you've just finished uni and you're 21, 22, you know what? I wouldn't be even thinking about CISO. I'd just be thinking about, you've got to have a bit of a career path you map out, but I think it's almost one step at a time. It's a bit like, I don't know, I'm a 5-year-old and I'm going to NASA. Well, just take it easy, just one step at a time. But you do have to plan things out, right? You do have to plan things out. But just one step at a time. You're not going to be a CISO next week. Just do your job. And this is what's happening with this generation now. They seem to job skip every 6 to 9 months. To me, as an oldie, it does not look good on the resume. I want to see someone who's got to, at least in a position, at least for 2 years, learn that, make some mistakes, make some good wins there, and then move on. But when I see resumes of, number one, filled with 1,001 certifications, and number two, their job hopping every 6 to 9 to 12 months, I just don't think that's a good look. Or is that an old-fashioned view of mine?
No, absolutely not. I think you're right. But I want to also comment on a point that you skipped really quickly.
Sure.
You ask any 5-year-old, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nobody tell you're going to be CISO. Nobody going to tell you're going to be CEO or CFO. If you ask a 5-year-old, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be a CFO. Is something wrong with you? Most of the people want to do something they're passionate about. And that's what you need to ask yourself. You need to ask, what's my 5-year-old me would love to do? Yeah. That should be your guiding principle. I remember the first time I've been asked that question when I was young. Maybe it wasn't 5-year-old, but I was young enough to remember it. Is they asked me, what do you want to do? I said, I want to play with technology and computer. That's what drives me, what makes me passionate about it, because that's a very relatable to my childhood passion and dream about it. That's what I ask anybody. Ask yourself if you want to be a CISO, and if you can come up with the right answer, ask yourself, what's my 5-year-old version of me wanted to do?
Let's go to the opposite end of being a 5-year-old. In 30 years, Lue, what, you know, just say you've cut down, you've Spartan Security is the most well-known security consultancy in the world, and it's time to sort of cut down. What do you think you'll be doing in retirement, or do you think you'll always be doing some part-time consultancy? Have you got anything like, yeah, I'm going to go to Italy and live on the beach or something? Have you got anything like that up your sleeve?
Oh, look, I always said I need to define something in my day. And if I look at what do I want to, if I'm not doing cyber, what else would I be doing? I would open a small coffee shop in a very small town, maybe in Europe, and brew my own coffee and roast my own coffee and drink maybe 20,000 cups of coffee a day. That's my something I say, well, like I can do, I can deal with less stress. And if I have all the spare time, that might be something I say now, but maybe in 10, 20 years, I will change. But I think if I want to stay in the industry, I will always find myself, I will be a part-time consultant, type advisory type role in a part-time basis. Doesn't have to be crazy hours. Doesn't have to be a significant amount of customers. It just got a couple of hours to keep me in touch with the industry, keep me in touch with the role. That will be my two. Either I'll be a part-time, very, very part-time consultant advisor, or I'll go and open my own small coffee shop somewhere in the world.
Well, I look forward to wandering into Cafe Spartan in maybe in Sparta. You never know.
Yes,
you never know.
Exactly.
Before we wrap it up, have you got any last comments that you might want to make? Or
yeah.
At 10 to 6 on a Friday night, are you pretty cooked?
Well, no, look, the only word of wisdom I said to anybody who is working in cybersecurity or having a cybersecurity manager or CISO role there, just go back to the basic hygienic stuff, and you find most of the issues should not happen if you did the basic hygienic. So those would be my wrapping up word in this podcast. And thank you very much for having me, Richard. I was really honored and pleased with this discussion, and it's really interesting and it's really enjoyable discussion with you.
Thanks for your time. I know you're a busy man. I think we start off with some questions about your company and all that, but I like the way, you know, the conversation flowed and where the places it went where I didn't expect it to go, but that was good. I probably won't see you before the end of the year, so by all means, have a great Christmas and an even more successful year for Spartan Security next year.
Thank you very much, mate. And let's catch up over another coffee very soon. Thank you.
I'll probably pay for the next one. Probably.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lue.
Cheers.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Well, that wraps up our three-part episode of the podcast with Lue. I hope you really enjoyed it. Now, Christmas is certainly upon us. Today, I popped into Chadstone to do some last-minute shopping. Needless to say, it was absolutely packed. That's what happens when you leave some of your shopping to the last minute. But hey, if you're like most of us, you will now be on 2 weeks of leave. Hallelujah. A great time to catch up with family and friends, and more importantly, relax. Thanks to everyone who supported my venture into podcasting. My work didn't put up any complaints, which was great. There are 1,001 people I want to have on the podcast next year. Hopefully they'll find the time to speak with me then. Until then, it's a sincere thank you very, very, very much from me. Hope your Christmas goes well. And you never know, I may even post up a podcast or two over Christmas. I hope you enjoyed talking cybersecurity, and let's continue the conversation again in 2024. Stay safe. See ya.